Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Gorgeous George and Goes, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on!
From the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, this is MMA Junkie Radio.
We rollin'!
What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes checking in here on a Sunday night for your Monday morning delivery. And we got a good show for you, man. We're going to go over the results from the UFC Fight Night card in Las Vegas at the Apex, as well as BKFC's Knuckle Mania 4. So we got those two events, and we have a couple interviews for you. Tatiana Suarez, UFC strawweight, and she did fight at flyweight during her comeback after almost 4 years. She had a 2-0 2023 after 4 years off, almost 4 years off due to injury. Look, she's a number one contender at strawweight, but the reason I keep bringing up flyweight, not just because she came back in 2023 and won, she holds a win at strawweight over the current flyweight champion, and that's Alexa Grasso. So she's got options. Burt Watson, former UFC site coordinator, finished, well, we think, we don't know, he finished up with Bellator as their site coordinator. He'll be a guest of ours as well. He's got a lot cooking, so we'll get down with Bert like we used to back in the day and talk to him for a bit, see what he's all about here. We'll be right back to start the show. Do you miss those days, Goes, when Bert would come by the studio and spend time with us? It, not just because he was the UFC site coordinator, but because A, the fights were at Mandalay Bay, and B, we had a studio at Mandalay Bay. That seems like an eternity ago, doesn't it?
It does. It seems like a long time ago. But yeah, those are fun times.
It's basically about 4 years ago, I would say, that we had to exit the studio because of the pandemic. So, and it was about 4.5 years ago that we ended our run on Sirius XM, but new times, a lot more work doing video. We have a new project with Spinning Backclick. So yeah. But guess what? The friendships are still there. And I've often said, even if we were to stop doing MMA work, there's probably about 5% out of all the people we've ever encountered that we would remain friends with. I can honestly say Bert would be one of them.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, Bert's somebody we're going to talk to for a long time.
Yeah, he's a solid cat for sure. All right, in the meantime, let's go over some of the results from this past weekend in combat sports, we'll say. What do you want first, BKFC or UFC?
I think you always have to go with what's popping. And what was popping this weekend was BKFC.
It was. So let's go over it. Mike Perry defeated Thiago Alves in the main event. All it took was 1 minute, and he dispatched of Thiago Alves. And I guess now with Luis Palomino finally taking an L and Mike Perry just continuing to, you know, his assault basically on a lot of well-known names, man, Rockhold, Alves, MVP, Alvarez. Did I say Alvarez? Yeah. I mean, like, seriously, this guy's racked up some names. He's found his spot. He's the biggest name over at Bare Knuckle Fighting Championship. So congrats to Platinum Mike Perry. Mick Terrell defeated Lorenzo Hunt in the co-main event. Terrell is the heavyweight champ, right? And another heavyweight fight took place. Big Ben Rothwell defeated Todd Duffy. Now, that one was a shoulder injury. I mean, he knocked him down, but Duffy pointed to a shoulder that he couldn't continue. And it looked like he had his wits about him, and at least his head was clear and he could probably stand up. But that's how that fight ended as well. Another TKO stoppage. So literally those last three all went really quick in the first round. I'm not even sure if you add up the time of the of those three fights that he, it would even be 5 minutes.
I think that's what's so MMA. I think that's what's so important about BKFC is if you watch the card from beginning to end, you're always going to have these barn burner type fights. And they had a couple of them. The last three fights, there's not much you can really do about that. You know, that probably didn't go the way they thought it would go, but they set us up for greatness. You know, it just so happens that Mike Perry landed a pretty damn good shot on Thiago Alves. He took his time. He tried to get good and fight, but it just wasn't there. And then what happened with Ben and Todd Duffy, yeah, that just doesn't happen all that often. But overall, the card was great. There were some great fights on there.
Yeah, you know what sucks about Rothwell and Duffy is they were supposed to fight last December, I think, and Rothwell had to pull out. And so this fight's been building for a while. And so for all of it to get settled in 43 seconds, really was just two exchanges. And then we had the, you know, that injury. And what you really want, especially out of a guy like Big Ben, is, I don't want to say, let me say this right. I know Ben won't be offended, but like a legit removal from consciousness type of KO is what he wants. Not this type of TKO, right? Mm-hmm. And it's just always nice because I'd find it hard to believe Ben isn't next for a world title fight. So it's nice to build off that and then, you know, now fight Terrell for the world title. But yeah, he was kind of stripped of that a little bit. Now, we don't even know that if Duffy doesn't hurt his shoulder, he doesn't come back and win. It didn't look like that's what was going to happen because it was the second time he got put down, but it just sucks. And both guys are really cool. We know them both. So big buildup for an anticlimactic finish is all I'm trying to say, I guess.
Yeah, what sucks is if you look at what happened in Mick Terrell's fight and you look at what happened in Ben Rothwell's fight, so little time passed in both of them that you could literally tell those two guys, why don't you just come back out and you two fight right now? I mean, yes. They'd probably both do it, you know, but
yeah,
those things just can't happen. But it's unfortunate. BKFC, that's their staple card, right, for the year. And it was a good one. It was fun. It maybe, I think last year's might have got it a little bit. But I thought it was a fun card. And then, you know, David Feldman, man, he don't play. He breaks news every big card. And he dropped a doozy on us, didn't he?
Yeah. So Conor McGregor is now a part owner of BKFC. And the fighters seem to be pretty excited about it. And McGregor looks to be pretty excited about it. So does BKFC. So that's cool. You know, like it's good to see McGregor in that type of news versus him getting in trouble type of news.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's expanding his, we'll call it his business portfolio now. So he's in fight management and, or not promotions, along with, you know, having the brewery that he has and the whiskey that he has and the, what is it, like an August McGregor suit line or clothesline or whatever mm-hmm. that is. He's got that going on. So that's cool. That's far different from the Conor McGregor I remember, where when we first interviewed him, he was on actual welfare. He was using those checks to save up, scrape up so that he could, you know, continue going through Cage Wars and make it through the UFC.
Yeah, I think it's a big move anytime a big name like that can attach themselves to what you're trying to accomplish. That's really, really big for the organization. I'm a little reluctant for David Feldman just because he works so damn hard, him and his team, to get this to where it is today. I really, really hope that these two entities can work together and work well, you know, really continue the momentum that they have into something even bigger.
Yeah. I mean, when we met David Feldman, McGregor was the biggest name in MMA. I mean, who would have thought that those two would actually work together one day?
Mm-hmm.
We would have never guessed it. I don't think any of us thought BKFC would get this big. I actually knew it had potential. Like, I look at Power Slap and I'm like, well, I mean, if Dana says it's getting big, good for him. Somewhere in the world is clicking, you know, for him to provide all those numbers, right, of how massive it is. But it, to me, it doesn't pop like with the people that I know. Whereas BKFC, you could tell, man, that thing had some legs to it. You know, it was, it reminded me a little bit of the old Kimbo fights. It reminded me a little bit of, what was it, some videos I used to watch, Street Justice or whatever. And even just the old videos of, you know, bare knuckle fights from a long time ago, right? 100 years ago, in black and white. It's just great. I love having it as a, like a side piece, I guess, to MMA for me. Boxing just can't provide compelling matchups all, every other weekend or every weekend of the year. Submission grappling is cool, but I only like to see the big names do it. Kickboxing has been tough to get back into.
Yeah.
Muay Thai, you know, we used to kind of be fans of LFA, or what was it called? Lion Fight, excuse me.
Lion Fight.
Yeah, but this thing right here, bare knuckle's legit, dude. It's just, well, it's solid for me. Love it.
Like Lion Fight, there's nothing about it that it's drifted me away from it, other than it's not as easy to find anymore and it's not as consistent. And that's what BKFC has kind of done, is they're very consistent. Just there's a card every other week or so, it feels like. And on some of these cards, I would argue the matches at the top are almost more compelling than a lot of Apex cards.
I would agree. And remember when we used to think Invicta was pretty cool? I mean, I still think it's pretty cool, but the UFC stole so many of their names that it's tough for them guys, you know?
They so, just had their anniversary too.
Invicta?
Yeah, I don't know which one. I can look it up real quick, but I think it's today. Or
I'd put them somewhere around 15 years, maybe.
Let's see here. I just saw it 12 years ago they launched Invicta.
Wow. Speaking of Bare Knuckle Mania or Bare Knuckle Fighting Championship, here's an interesting article. Actually, you know what? Let me finish giving the results, and then we'll do that. Alfredo Angulo defeated Jeremiah Riggs. Ugh. Julian Lane, if you guys remember him, just let me bang, bro. He defeated Evgeny Kurdanov. Crystal Pittman defeated Sydney Smith. There was a draw between David Diaz and Shane Jordan. Andrew Anglecore defeated Ruben War. Frank Alvarez defeated Victor Rosas. Vincent Familiari defeated Fernando Gonzalez. Fernando the Ghost Gonzalez is from Murrieta, California. I remember he used to fight a lot for Bellator. Tommy Aaron defeated Richard Brooks. Keith Richardson defeated Cody Vidal. And how about this? When they go to California, not just MMA, but any type of combat sports, the salaries are released. It's a commission that will release the salaries. You want to hear some?
Yeah.
All right. Keith Richardson versus Cody Vidal, $6,000 and $5,000. Tommy Aaron versus Richard Brooks, $6,000 and $5,000. Familiari and Gonzalez, $6,000 and $5,000. Looks to me like they each get $5,000 just to show, and the winner takes home an extra grand. Daniel Alvarez versus Victor Rosas, $7,500 and $6,000. Anglecore and Ruben Moore, $6,500. Diaz and Jordan, $4,400. Okay, so they can go less than $5,000. Pittman and Smith, $8,000. Oh my God, and Pittman only made $500.
I think what it is there's like a minimum that you have to be paid per round. And I think that's where that comes in. Maybe it's $100 per round or something like that. But I think that's where some of the lower ones come in.
If I was a promoter, I'd rather not have someone on my card that's going to take home $500 and everyone's going to know about it.
Yeah, I could see that.
Especially if I'm calling it Knuckle Mania, baby. This is huge. And someone took home $500. I don't know. Lane took home $20,000. Kurdanov $12,500. We're getting to the big ones now. Angulo and Jeremiah Riggs, 19.5 for Angulo, Riggs 8,000. Duffy took home 85 grand. Rothwell 150. Rothwell looked in pretty good shape, and I loved his shorts too.
Yeah, he's been doing that, and the cloak, I think it's pretty cool. But you're right, he did look in really solid shape.
Mick Terrell, 100,000. And he's the champ, and he made less than Ben Rothwell. Lorenzo Hunt, 100,000. And in the main event, Mike Perry, 600,000. Thiago Alves, 200,000. Mm-hmm. I guarantee you Mike Perry was not making that over at UFC.
Not even.
And he doesn't have to train wrestling or jiu-jitsu either.
Right. But he's earned it, right? Like, not just what he does in the ring, but also what he does when he gets his hand on the mic. He sets things up. He set up hopefully a future match there with Darren Till. That would be interesting. Sitting cage side was Nate Diaz. You know, that's another name that has the liberty of being able to hop in there. And, you know, I kind of mentioned it on social media. Look, the first thing that I think of is, what is Conor McGregor going to do with his contract with the UFC? Because if he's got one fight left and it's Michael Chandler and he's out, why not do that third fight at BKFC, you know, under his own banner, take in the majority of that money against Nate Diaz? There's just so much possibility for these fighters outside the UFC right now.
What I'm not sure of is, how big is his stake? He's a part owner, but is he 51, 49, 50, 50, or does he just have 5%? I heard they were worth $400 million. I don't know if I was reading Forbes or something. I just happen to remember that, which is good. I mean, they're only like 4 years old or five. But I wonder what his stake is in all this, you know. We don't seem to have all the details. What I can tell you is this goes. McGregor has two fights left. One of them is going to be Chandler. Then he'll have one fight left. And Mike Bond, our colleagues, pointed it out on a few spinning back clicks that it's more lucrative for the UFC as they try and either re-up with ESPN or maybe look into Apple TV or Netflix or Amazon Prime as their new broadcast partner. It's obviously nice when you say, hey, look, we just locked up McGregor for his next six fights, you know, or whatever that comes down to. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. I imagine the UFC have to give a little. McGregor might have to give a little. I don't know.
They're going to have to give a lot.
If he loses to Chandler, he has to know the writing's on the wall. And would we want to see Diaz versus McGregor? Sure, just because it's 1-1, but not because it matters in the lightweight or welterweight division. It's just, all right, let's just see who wins this one, you know. But I don't know. I'm anxious to see what the numbers will be like with Chandler. I mean, maybe there's still box office, you know, hits or whatever. I really couldn't tell you, but
I think he's proven that, you know, he's still going to be a box office hit. The question is, what happens if Michael Chandler lays him out, right? If Michael Chandler lays him out, will he be that big? Like, part of what makes him big is his ability to pick up the mic and talk trash. But if you haven't racked up a win in years, like, what all can you say that people are even going to care about or believe at that point?
Exactly. So
that's where it becomes interesting for me, because yes, the UFC can use him as a very big bargaining chip, but he knows that, and he's got a lot of money now, and he's one of the guys out there that, you know, the money that he made off the Floyd Mayweather, that fight pretty much set him up for life. And that is the perfect example, Floyd Mayweather, of a person who probably turned down a decent sized contract to promote himself. And look what he's been doing ever since. You know, the ball has been in his court and he's handled it. Even as stupid as like a year ago when, you know, he's just fighting random jobbers that just show up and he fights them for like six rounds or something. He's still making a lot of money off of that. More than probably what most main event fighters make in the UFC. Like, it's pretty damn crazy. So I think Connor's smart in the sense that he will see that upside. And right off the bat, there's
you don't think he'll resign.
Honestly, dude, I don't think so.
Yeah, it's not far fetched.
But they're gonna make life hell for him, you know, because they can hold him out for a long time. But the thing is, at that point, if he lost that fight, then it doesn't really matter. He's not like fighting for belts. Whatever's left over out there, nobody really cares if he fights Jake Paul coming off a loss. Nobody cares if he fights Jorge Masvidal coming off a loss. Nobody cares about Nate Diaz. Like, they just want to see the scrap.
I could see them saying, look, if you're going to go bare knuckle or box, God bless you, but you ain't doing MMA other than the UFC. We're not going to let you go to PFL or something like that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, if McGregor loses to Chandler, especially if he gets clipped, I think he's going to lose some star power. Like, I could see it as well when Ronda Rousey lost. Like, I'm sure the numbers were still pretty decent, but because it was only her first loss, the home loss. But after Nunes, you could just tell, like, all right, she's, you know, her goose is cooked. So I don't know. It's big news, and we'll see what it boils down to. Let's talk about the UFC, Alex Perez, or actually, I think now's a good time to do our first interview, and then we'll come back to the UFC. We probably went a little bit over than we should have with VKFC, but VKFC of the two, like Ghost says, was the pop-in event from this past weekend. So I didn't mind talking to Mike Perry. I really dig Mike Perry, to tell you the truth, and Ben Rothwell, and how they just look so happy over there. So it's always, you know, just good to talk about them in that light. Their exits from the UFC weren't my favorite ways for popular athletes to leave. Tatiana Suarez, she has no fight coming up, right? But she really wants Wei Li, Zhang Wei Li. Look, she's undefeated. She's beaten some big names. Yeah, she's been away, but she was 2-0 in 2023. I think it's just a matter of the UFC deciding when and where it's going to take place. But how is it not Zhang Wei Li versus Tatiana Suarez next in the strawweight division? We'll find out. We'll be right back. What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes checking in here on a Saturday. We get to talk to one of the best in the business. It's Tatiana Suarez, who's 10-0 overall. That nice, shiny goose egg on the loss column makes her one of the big stars in the game. Not only that, she's got three major wins over former and current world champions, and she's gotten down at flyweight and strawweight in 2023 after this huge comeback of almost 4 years. Tatiana, how are you? How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you? It's good. Nice. It's Saturday. It's a nice day, so I'm glad.
Yeah, I haven't been in Vegas in almost 6 months. So you tell me, like, are you close to jumping in that pool? Is it pool weather yet?
Actually, it's so weird. Like, literally yesterday, it was like pouring rain outside. So It's actually very nice right now. Like, right now, I would say it's like maybe like in the 70s or like the high 70s. So nice. It's nice right now.
And then another thing, I was just eating popcorn and I was just curious. Are you a movie person? And if so, what kind of movies do you like? And are you a popcorn person?
I do like popcorn. And I literally was just watching a movie right now, like right before I came over here.
What movie?
It's called Inheritance, but I haven't finished it yet.
All right. Well, I think we asked too many questions about how's your weight? What kind of film have you done on your opponent? And I think a lot of our fans like to know more about the fighters. One last one. Are you a Lakers fan? Does it hurt that they're down 3-0, or do you not care one bit about
them? I'm a huge Lakers fan, but yeah, I mean, man, it is what it is.
It's a tough one. They played good against the Nuggets. Tough,
but I am. I grew up watching Lakers games and going to Lakers games as a kid because, you know, I'm from California. So, and I'm near so LA. I'm only 30 minutes from LA.
So are we. So it's a stab in the heart that they're about to get swept.
Yeah,
all right.
It's okay, though.
You know, a few weeks ago, Max Holloway won in a different weight class. And so he's got so many options. Now, I know you're focused on 115. Is your sole focus on 115? Or have you ever let the matchmakers know, if something over here pops, I can, you know, I can also do 125 like you did the one time. I don't know.
Yeah, I actually did, but they said that I couldn't do that, which was, you know, like odd because like I've seen him, you know, whoever just fought Rose, Amanda Ribas, do it.
Right.
Not that I didn't know her name. I know her name. I just could, like, you know, I like had a blank. So I don't want to be disrespectful. Like, oh, that girl, I don't even know her name. I know her name. You know, I just forgot for a second. But yeah, no, no, I've asked them, you know, and I wanted to do that. But they said, like, you got to make a run at 115 or 125, you know. But, like, you know, it kind of sucks, though, because there's just, like, sometimes there's just, like, at certain points, the divisions are, like, all booked up, you know. Like, they're all booked. Right. So, like, and I'd like to an array of opponents, you know. Like, I like to test myself. So, like, I've asked for people at 125, and they've told me, like, I got to either pick and choose. So I had to choose 115.
And here's another question for you. Do you think, because you're such a powerhouse, honestly, that the champ, Zhang Weili, do you think she's more scared of you, or are you more, not scared, but, you know, concerned, we'll say? Because obviously she's a powerhouse too. She's a world champion now with title defenses. But, man, I mean, you are an incredibly gifted athlete who's done well so far.
You know, I think she, I don't know how she feels. So I can't really speak for her, but, you know, I'm excited to face her. You know, if I've had the opportunity to face her, that's truly, like, at this point, my dream fight. At first, a while back, it was Rose, and that still is a fight that I would love to have. And I keep calling, like, I'm not trying to call Rose out every single time, you know, because that's just crazy. It's like, at this point, like, okay, I know, like, maybe it could still happen, you know, but, like, right now it's not happening. And, like, you know, when I saw the Amanda Ribas thing, I'm like, what is going on? Like, just because, like, you know, Amanda Ribas is at 115, and then she had the opportunity to face her at 125. I'm like, I would have done that, you know? It's like, so it was just a little funny. But right now I'm just focusing on, you know, whoever they put me in front of, and I'm excited to do so. But I'm really excited to fight Weili when given the opportunity.
Weili
has been, you know, she's had a couple dominant performances, and I really want to test myself.
Mm-hmm. She also showed a few flaws, you know, like she got put down a few times by Jeonan Yan. How did you assess her title defense, the performance? Like, in the end, she would be able to get up, and then she'd be able to do what she did. And I think she won 4 of the 5 rounds pretty clean. But overall, what did you see in that matchup? Did you feel a lot better after those 25 minutes than before in terms of how you would do?
I think prior to, like, that matchup, I knew, you know, how, like, I kind of know how I would do. But, yeah, I mean, it showed just a little bit more, you know, of her game and things like that. I thought she did well. You know, she was able to capitalize like I knew she would. I knew she would win in the grappling department just because Yan is just not good at all on the ground. And I'm nothing against her, but she's a phenomenal striker. But, you know, she's not good on the ground at all. So I knew that Weili would be able to, you know, out-grapple her. And, you know, and Yan, not being a wrestler herself, actually got a couple takedowns, if I can remember, you know. I'd have to watch it again, you know, but I think she did get, like, a couple takedowns. Not, like, she didn't mean to. I think they just engaged and she, like, threw her to the ground or something, you know. So just seeing that just shows me that, you know, I think that I could, you know, impose my will against her. And my grappling is very, very good, so I think I do well, just like I've always known, you know.
Tatiana, so both of you, we've met both of you, and you're both just have great personalities. You're fun to be around. But Vegas is such a small world, right? And with the PI and all that, how does that work? Like, do you ever run into her? And when you do, is it a
handshake? I've seen her almost every day, her last fight.
Yeah, like, is that weird?
Right before her title fight, I've seen her almost every single day. And I'm very humble, you know what I mean? So, like, and I'm very respectful of all of my opponents that I've ever faced. I've never said bad things about my opponents. The only thing that, like, it's made me sound like a complete ass was when I fought Carla and she was saying that, like, we were friends. And I was like, we're not friends. Like, I don't know why she keeps saying this. And, like, they only put that part, you know? And, but I was just being honest. Like, we've literally only had maybe, like passing, you know, in passing, like, hello. And that was it. And I'm like, I can't say that that's my friend. You know what I mean? Like,
true.
You know what I mean? Like, that's just false. So I sounded like an asshole on the thing, like on the thing when we're about to fight. It was like, I don't know why she keeps saying we're friends. We're not friends. And I'm like, that just sounds like such an asshole thing. But I'm like, I wasn't meaning it to be an asshole. I'm just being honest. Like, we aren't friends. So, like, I don't feel like it would be, like, weird to fight her. You know what I mean? Because we aren't friends. So, so, like, I was just saying that. But, yeah, you know, I've been nice to all my opponents. And, like, I've seen, even though Whaley's not my opponent, but I think she is a future opponent, but I still treat her with respect. And every time I would see her, I'd say, hi, how are you? You know, basically, I'm just helping her with her English.
Yeah, there you go. So I want to bring up the documentary. I watched it. I had a blast watching it. And what I loved about it was you don't really necessarily have to be a fan of mixed martial arts to enjoy it. Yeah. And so as I'm watching this thing, I started to think, you know, we just had a big weekend in boxing and this fight, you know, there's even talks about maybe in the Sphere. And so I wanted to ask you, how much in mixed martial arts, and especially if this matchup were to happen with Zhang Weili, nationalistic pride, how much does that play into things for you?
You know, that's actually really funny because, you know, I said that I would like to fight on the Sphere because I am Mexican. And, you know, just because I don't speak Spanish doesn't make me any less Mexican than anybody else. And I literally had this conversation with someone who had commented on Helen Yee's thing. He was like, you're not Mexican. You don't even speak Spanish. And he's like, you carry around the American flag and this and that. And I'm just like, I don't know. Like, I'm very, like, I grew up in California, which is basically a second Mexico, if you really think about it, you know, like, so the culture is all around me. And I grew up in towns where it was only Mexican. So it's like, I just, you know what I mean? It's like, I am Mexican. And just because I don't speak it doesn't mean that I'm not Mexican. And I feel like that fighting spirit really runs through my veins. I'm very proud to be Mexican, but I also am very proud to be a Mexican American because America has given me all the opportunities, allowed me to do the things that I have done. I've also represented Mexico when I was a young kid. We did these things where we would go to Mexico and we would wrestle there and we would wrestle other teams. But we were from America. We'd go there and we would wrestle, like, but we're all Mexican. Like, we all have dual citizenship because my dad is from Mexico, you know? Mm-hmm. So I've had the opportunity to do these things. Of course, I represented the U.S. when I went into world competitions because that's where I'm from. And, you know, that's where I grew up. So that's the reason why I did that. But I'm very proud to be a Mexican American.
You know, I always think of Tito Ortiz when he would come out with the American flag and the Mexican flag on the other side.
Yeah.
That's kind of how him and I grew up. Our mother's from Peru. Our father is of Mexican descent, but we were born here. But, you know, you still feel all those things. You grew up, especially in California.
Yeah, you know? It's a cultural thing. Like, it's like, I mean, like I said, like, California is like a second Mexico. Like, if you really, you know what I mean? Like, it's like a lote, man, every single day. Like, I ate an lote every single day when I was a kid. Like, it's just like a culture. Like, my corner store, you know, was like full of Mexican candy. Like, you know, you just don't see those things like everywhere else. You know what I mean? So it's just like if you go to like Idaho, they're not going to have like, you know, the Mexican candy there. Like, it's just, you know, it's not going to be, no one's going to buy it.
Well, you know, if it were on that card, I think it would be tremendous. I think it would be so much fun. And even, you know, the way Dana White talks about it, I mean, he was so high on UFC 300 and look what we got out of that, right? It was a great card.
It was amazing.
So hopefully that does happen. And I just wanted to ask you my last question. Have the matchmakers, have your management told you like we're a little bit closer or where are you at in this process? Because we all want to see this. And I know you use the word if, but if I take off my media hat as a fan, there is no if. This is what we want to watch, right? We want to see this fight.
Yeah, see, that's what I said. And, you know, I was just talking about that. We don't really have like a clear thing, but I just felt like, I mean, what other matchup would you guys want to see, you know? And I felt like this was the matchup to make. And, you know, I think like as a fan, like if I was a fan, I would want to see it, you know, just because it's something that she hasn't seen before, a defeated fighter that's long, rangy, and has really good wrestling and grappling. So I just, and not to mention, I'm also like a go-getter out there, you know what I mean? Like you don't really see me disengaged too much. I have, you know, I'm physical in clinch areas and stuff like that. So I just feel like it would present something that, you know, maybe the fans haven't seen from her, and it's a matchup I think is very exciting.
I think you told me once a few years ago that the move from California to Vegas, you weren't sure of it. It now seems you've been in Vegas a few years. Have you adapted, or do you still go back and train with the old team? Like, how's that relationship, I guess?
Yeah, so I still go back to California during my camps, and like I just work with my coach just because it's a lot more, you know, private, and I'm getting like that one-on-one that I really, you know, need as a fighter. Mm-hmm. So, and I'm still trying to figure out the training out here and everything. I mean, I have a lot of partners and stuff like that, but it's been really difficult, you know, just like fighting partners. There's a couple, you know, that will help me out and stuff like that, and like that always helps. But when it comes to, you know, being a woman and there's not many that can give you good work. And so like we've had to really pick and choose my partners and stuff like that, because a lot of times, you know, like we're trying to stay healthy. So like going with guys and stuff like that, sometimes we run into like injuries and stuff because they're just more explosive in some areas. Especially because I'm a grappler, you know, so like we get in these grappling situations and stuff like that. And that's where you're a little bit more prone to injury than if you're like a stand up fighter and you're just like, you know what I mean? Like you're going to get less injuries if you spar a guy as opposed to like, if you're grappling a guy, you know? So that's where we were running into some problems. But I mean, if you really look at it, like I've only had those two major injuries that really kept me out, you know? It's not like I hurt my toe and I pull out of the fight, you know, it's just like, right. So I've worked through injuries before. If I can work through them, I will, you know, like I've had like several back injuries and stuff like that I've just worked through, and I've gotten through my camps and I've had fights, you know. I've had like, if you look at my record, I've had 15 fights, and actually, if you look at my record, I think I'm 11-0 on there as opposed to 10.
Oh, okay. My bad. I went off Tapology and they had you at 10-0, but I believe you.
Yeah.
And, I guess my last question would be, Tatiana, is, you know, Johnny Hendricks used to live in Vegas. I don't know if you remember him, the welterweight champ.
And yeah, of course.
He told
Johnny Hendricks
about,
was a wrestler. He used to wrestle with my brother.
Yeah. There you go.
He was on a team with him.
Oh, nice. Oh, okay. At Oklahoma State, you said?
No, they did like, so there's like a national team, and they run on the same national team together.
Okay.
Yeah, my brother has a picture with them when they were younger.
Johnny, towards the end of his career, he was about your age when he told me this. He was about 32, 33. He would go back to Oklahoma State and wrestle, right? And he wanted to get those fresh, young lions, those hungry lions that are making their way up. And he said, because as you get older, the more you pull away from wrestling, you're developing your hands, the other martial arts, you're just not getting those reps in. And so even though you might be a national champ or a two-time national champ, you're just not what you were back then when you were doing it every day. Right. How about you? How would you say your skills, you know, when you were at your all-time high in wrestling, or when you felt your strongest, when you were just a wrestler, are you very removed from that, or do you get enough wrestling reps in that you can say, oh, I'm like I was, you know, when I was competing for the United States?
I definitely don't think that I'm the same wrestler as it was then, just because you do so many more reps, you know. Now, you know, I grapple a lot. Like every single time I spar, I get at least, you know, I get a takedown. And that's my reps. But it's like, and then I do, you know, wrestling on certain days and stuff like that. But I was wrestling twice a day for 2 hours a day for like 5 days a week. So it's just like, there's just, no, I'm not the same muscle. Like, there's no, you know what I mean? Like, that's just a different level. You can, it's all about timing and things like that. Like, it's like shot, reshot, things like that. Things that you don't really do too much in MMA. And I do it, just not as many times. So if I were to do that, I would not, I definitely would not be able to get through a camp if I had to only wrestle twice a day and then do stand up. Like, that's just too many practices for anybody. You know what I mean? Like, that'd be like crazy amounts of practicing. Cause the practices were 2 hours as opposed to like our wrestling practice now is only like an hour, and that's like on Wednesday, you know? Mm-hmm. And then the other days I'm incorporating grappling. Like, I go to my back quite often for like guillotines and stuff like that. So it's not the same. Like, usually when I was a wrestler, I would sprawl as opposed to now I'll grab someone's neck. You know what I mean? So
right.
It's just a lot different. Yeah.
Do you think you, Carla, Misha have all sprung the idea for young girls in high school to go into wrestling? Like, do you think there's more wrestling now than there was back then because of these boys?
Oh, 100%. But it could just be because of, okay, so for instance, when I wrestled, there was only three, at the end of my wrestling career at Northview, there was about maybe 6 or 7 girls. When I first started, there was only like 3 girls, and then it was like 7. And by the time I like left high school, you know, and then when I left after that, it was like about 15. And then it was like, now there's about 50 girls on the team. And wow. I saw an article the other day, and it's literally the fastest growing sport, women's wrestling is.
That's incredible. That's cool.
Yeah.
All right. And I lied. I do have one more outside the box question. See that palm tree behind you?
Mm-hmm.
I've heard in Vegas that palm trees can be a breeding ground for scorpions. You ever encountered a scorpion in Vegas?
No, but that is very scary.
Yeah, no, I don't mean to scare you or anything, but I was just wondering if you had ever, you know,
that's right by my window too. So I'm like,
we get a scorpion service every 2 months. I think we've only had one scorpion in our house.
You live in Vegas?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So actually my friend Rachel, her husband has encountered 2 of them. So like, I don't know. Now I'm like, shit, I'm sitting next to a one right now. Like, there's a palm tree on this side.
So what it was, I probably didn't represent it well. I guess when a lot of palm trees were brought from Arizona and from northern Mexico, you know, as the city was booming and people wanted to landscape it, that's what brought a lot of the scorpions. So it doesn't mean that because you have that, there's a scorpion there or anything like that. But I was just curious.
Okay. I'm like, breeding ground? You're telling me there's thousands in there? No, I'm just kidding.
No. Well, that's a good thing you haven't seen one yet. So,
yes, it is a good thing.
Thanks for the time. It's always great catching up with you, and we're glad you're healthy and ready to take a fight. I hope you get the spear. I think you deserve it. Like I say, you're a gangster, man. 11-0, and being able to fight in 2 weight classes, even though right now the focus is 115.
Yeah,
the UFC's got themselves a star right here, and hopefully they can put you on that platform so you can succeed. It's got to be the spear.
Thank you. I appreciate it. There's a bug on my phone, but it's okay. Thank you.
All right, guys. Tatiana. Enjoy your Saturday. Thanks for the time.
Thank you, too. Bye-bye. Right.
You think the UFC would go with Grasso versus Shevchenko, right, in the main event, and then a Mexican-American in Suarez challenging Zhang Weili? You think that would be a nice 1-2 punch for the Sphere on Mexican Independence Day?
I think so, man. I think that would be fun. I'd definitely be down to both of them, to watch both of them.
So the Valentina Grasso fight doesn't need a bigger name like a Duplessis versus Adesanya or Edwards versus Muhammad. Do you think the ladies can carry this thing?
I think they can. I think these two, I mean, as long as something underneath them is fun, you know, it may not be a title on the line, but something fun.
Mm-hmm. We'll find out. I'm anxious to see. It's been done before, but this is the debut at the Sphere, and it's Mexican Independence Day, and Let's just say, luckily, Goz and I are Mexican American, so I think I can get away with this. But they're a little misogynistic, you know. I'm not so sure they want to just go with that. These are actual Mexican fans. They used to travel on Cinco de Mayo, on Independence Day, to come over and watch boxing. And I just remember seeing the boots and the belts and the sombreros and the cowboy hats. And I don't know. I don't know how big Alexis Grasso's gotten in Mexico, to tell you the truth. I don't think she's reached Brandon Moreno status, but maybe I'm wrong.
Maybe not, but she is their champion right now. You know, so I think
our only champ. Yeah. All right. So let's see here. I think I was going to talk about UFC next. The UFC had a card at the Apex. And, you know, it wasn't racked with talent or anything like that, but still. We had some decent finishes, especially in the co-main event and the main event. So in the main event, Alex Perez defeated Matheus Nicolau. So Nicolau had won like six straight. Then he recently took an L. But you could say he's won six of seven, right? And in the division that's not that deep, one could argue that Nicolau was kind of maybe on a little bit of a title run. I know it sounds awkward to say him coming off another loss too, but he's 19-4-1 overall. He actually had a good run with UFC that was 3-1 the first time around. Took a couple fights on the regional scene, then came back and blasted through like six straight before losing to Brandon Royval and Alex Perez. So anyway, he's out. So Perez looked great, right? But he's also shaking off a three-fight losing streak. Now, what we had was a nice knockout. I wasn't really calling it a title challenger fight, except for maybe Nicolau, and that's even a stretch. But in the end, the KO was nice.
Yeah, that was at the top of your billing, right, of the card. The only thing that really made it feel somewhat important is the fact that you don't feel like anybody's really that far away from a title matchup in this division. So you could make that argument for Nicolau. For Perez, it's just it probably would have put him in a nice spot, which I think it has. I think a lot of people were watching. Gave him great reviews. If you look at his losses, it's only to quality opponents. What we need out of him is consistency, though. And to get that, you got to fight more.
Yeah, they were quality opponents. Title guys, you know. So I think he can make another run. He's been a title challenger before, but he ran into Figgy back in the day. I think on three weeks notice, if I'm not mistaken. So maybe this time he can get a proper shot if he can find himself there. But, hey, look, he got rid of one guy, Matheus Nicolau. Let's see who they match him up with next. Bogdan Guskov defeated Ryan Spann. It bothered me that Spann said he hadn't watched much video. I saw some of his pre-fight content. And yet again, he looked like a guy that just thinks he's bigger than he is. But I want to be clear. I'm not picking on just Ryan Spann. There's a lot of these guys and gals in the UFC that just think they've arrived and they're really bigger than they're not. When you sign a four-year, $100 million contract or $150 million contract, then you're that. You know, you're all that. MMA fighters, not many of them get to be all that. It takes a lot. And it can just go like that, you know? Congrats to Guskov. I mean, he's looked pretty sharp, I guess, in a couple of fights that he's had in the UFC.
Very.
And Ryan Spann, I don't know. I don't know why he doesn't know more about his opponent, to be honest. I don't know a sport where, you know, the other day, goes, I was watching Champions League. Let me see if I got this straight. I think it was Bayern Munich and Arsenal. It was Real and City, Bayern Munich and someone. Barcelona? I forget. And you see this defender for Germany. He's a black dude. Rudiger is his last name. And you know when they're doing the penalty kicks, they all have their arms around each other. The players are on the field just kind of like for support. He's breaking away, and he's pointing to the goalie like he's going to go this way. And that guy that's kicking the penalty hasn't even lined up and given anything away. What I think happened was Rudiger is just immersed in information. And he probably did a little bit of research on a lot of these guys. And he was able to share with his goalie. And the goalie stopped the penalty, and that helped them win. Why wouldn't you want to know as much as you can about your opponent?
Yeah, I have no idea. Because in life, anytime, anything else, if your doctor says, hey, we got to operate on your prostate, you don't go, okay, I'm available on Thursday. You ask questions, right? You investigate what the hell is going to happen. That happens in just about every other aspect of your life. Why wouldn't it happen here?
I don't know. I'm just shocked when I hear comments like that. I feel like MMA athletes wake up, a lot of them, when they've been able to put some money away. They got a nice car, house, or whatever, and they think they've actually made it, and they haven't. But for some reason, I think some of them just maybe get lazy, complacent.
I think he was just, honestly, I think he was lying.
Really? Because
that's a lot of people, right? That's, let's say that's your stance. Your coach has to agree with you, and your other coaches and training partners, like, somebody's got to say, come on, man, we got this stupid. We can't be doing this.
Yeah. Span kind of pissed away a streak that he had a few years ago. I think he was at 5 straight, and now what has he done? Let me look at here. He's 21-10 overall, and he's lost 3 straight. His run was, let's see, he came through the 21 Contender Series. He won 3, 4 in a row. Then he lost to Walker, Johnny Walker. Then he won 3 of his next 4, including Dominic Reyes. Then he's lost 3 in a row, Nikita Krylov, Anthony Smith, and Bogdan Guskov. Like, I'm not saying he's going to get cut or anything, but this is just not good.
Mm-hmm.
Karine Silva defeated Ariane Lipsky. Jonata Denise defeated Austin Lane. David Onama defeated Jonathan Pierce. Euros Medic defeated Tim Means. Vicious uppercut, man. I like Tim Means, but he's 39. So who knows how many fights he has left. I wouldn't put it past that he's probably got about 30, honestly, just in the UFC alone. Victor Henry defeated Hani Yahya. Austin Hubbard defeated Michael Figlak. Michelle Figlak. Dontel Mays defeated Kyle Machado. Ketlin Souza defeated Marnik Mann. Chris Padilla defeated James Yontop. Ivana Petrovic defeated Na Liang. Masha Tate Hayasir defeated Gabriel Benitez. The bonuses. Do we got them? Yes. 4 performances of the night. 50K to Perez, Guskov, Denise, and Medic. No, they did not get 300 like Tim Means had suggested, that they keep scooping out $300,000 bonuses. Crazy, huh? That in one night, Max Holloway got 12 performance of the night regular bonuses.
Yeah. It's incredible.
Yeah. All right. We'll be right back with Burt Watson. Good friend of the show. He's got a lot going on in his life. Author, site coordinator. Looks like he's just wrapped up there. And, of course, also a part of the MMA Junkie team in the Legend of Legend series. So we'll be right back to talk to the one and only Burt Watson. What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes connecting with one of our all-time favorite guests. It's none other than Burt Watson. He's a former UFC and Bellator MMA site coordinator. And most of all, he's a great friend. He's a legend of combat sports. What's going on, Burt? How are you?
Oh, baby, I'm trying to make it, boss. How about yourself? All is good on my end. All's good.
Same thing over here. I wouldn't rather spend a Sunday talking to someone as pleasant as you are. You're a great friend of ours. And, you know, you got a lot going on because we know you through MMA and the job that you did there, right? And
yes.
But, you know, you also, just this week, so many things that we've talked about on the side. You have a book coming out. You just released a Legend of Legend on MMA Junkie. So you are a multi-talented individual. And, you know, like I say, it's always a joy to spend some time with you here. So let's cover some of those topics here. First of all, I guess most recently, tell everybody, you know, Bellator MMA closed shop. It got bought by PFL. And they said they planned on offering everyone a job. Were you included in that? And if so, what's the status? You know, or will you be working with PFL in any capacity since they have like five or six different series going?
Well, first of all, they expressed the fact that they were going to offer jobs. The jobs were offered to people who were full-time Bellator staff members. I've never been a Bellator staff member, but I've been with Bellator as an independent contractor. So that was my status. So I do know that PFL did offer a few of the full-time staff members their same position, and they were transitioning into that part of it. And initially, what I was told, I got one phone call. Initially, what I was told was that the first six or seven fights that were going to stay under the Bellator banner, aside from the fight of champions that they had already, were going to be out of the country. And, you know, at this point in my career, I'm trying to do as much locally as I can. I'm kind of tired of getting on a plane and flying around the country. But that's what their schedule was the first six fights or so were going to be out of the country, and they were going to be all under the Bellator umbrella. And that's actually the last phone call that I got from them, or the last time that I heard. So I haven't been brought on to do any of the fights. They've already done three. The next one, I think, is in Paris. And then possibly in May or so, Bellator will, I think they're coming to Chicago. I'm not 100% sure. But I do know that as it's scheduled right now, the majority of them are going to be out of the country. And that's just something that I'd rather take a second look at right now, because I'm good with staying here in the States, and even better if I don't have to get on a plane and travel anymore.
Mm-hmm. Well, so then, since it sounds like you're more likely done than rather proceeding forward, how would you characterize the years you spent with Bellator, maybe putting a bow on that job in particular, of being a site coordinator first with the UFC and now with Bellator?
Well, it was, I mean, I've been in MMA since 1999. And I say that because that's the first time that I was introduced or met Dana or with Bernie Dillon to meet Dana White to transition from boxing into MMA. So from that time on through, you know, and I was with UFC until 2015. I've spent the last 3 years with Bellator. And I can tell you, man, it's been awesome. It's been an awesome ride. It was awesome working with the UFC, because that was the beginning of MMA as it is today. That was the beginning of mixed martial arts. I had no idea when I first got my intro to MMA what MMA really was. You know, I knew about Bruce Lee. I knew about mixed martial arts, kind of, but I didn't know that it was legitimately a sport. So when I got the intro to it, it was definitely something different and something that I had to get used to. So not only did I get used to it, but the good thing about it is that when I was brought on, I was told to do what I do best. So I was given the opportunity to create a lot of the situations of how it worked and how they operated, how, you know, bringing on a certain amount of cut men and positioning a certain amount of cut men in certain places, how the fighters kind of walked back and forth from the dressing rooms, how the dressing rooms were set up, the use of even going back, and I'm going to take credit for this, okay, the use of red and blue tape was something that back when, I would say maybe at UFC 40 or so, because the first UFC was UFC 30. I think at UFC 40, and I forgot who it was, but the two fighters were in the cage grappling. They were up against the cage, and I saw this. That was all I saw. And white tape. Didn't know who they were. And I found that kind of strange. And I said, you know what? I don't know who that is. I got to figure out a way that we can tell the difference of who's who when they're up against that cage or when they're on the floor. So using U-line and using gaff tape, something that I've always done, and I always knew that they were different colors. So I went to Dana with the tape, and I said to him that, you know what? I'd like to use these different tapes on the fighters to identify them. And I think the first one that we did was George St. Pierre against Matt Serra. And one of my guys messed it up because he put red tape on both guys, which I caught as they were walking out to the holding, So had to put the blue, good thing though, had to put the blue tape over top of the red tape. But it worked. And the first thing that Big John McCarthy came to me and said that, you know what? He said, that was an awesome idea because now I don't have to chase to see who's who. Peripherally, I can see the red and blue tape on the guy so I can identify the guy. And Herb Dean said the same thing. So it was that kind of thing that allowed me the freedom to institute things that I knew how to do and that I knew would work. And it was just, you know, those things became a staple in MMA and MMA productions, in promotions. All of those things became a staple. And the transition from UFC to Bellator was awesome because I got to work with the same people. I've known Scott Coker since the UFC bought Strikeforce. I knew Scott a little bit before then. I think I met Scott in maybe 2009-ish or so. So I knew him, I knew Kerry, and I knew a lot of the other people. So to go into that system, which was a system that was already in place that I was totally familiar with, you know, it was exciting. And I got to work with guys that I, you know, I've known, because for the most part, you know, MMA has grown so quickly and the face changes and the fighters change. But the corner people and the guys who were fighters and rookies when I first started are now seasoned corner people and people who are working and coaches and trainers. So I know them still, and they know me and they know my system and they're used to it. And they pretty much welcomed it, you know, and because it was a system that I put together that I thought was geared toward the comfort of the fighter, the comfort level of the fighter, that wasn't going to make the fighters uncomfortable.
That blue corner, red corner system has had quite an impact on the sport. In fact, just on our side alone, we have some content that we put out called the Blue Corner. So what it is it's not like the stories of, you know, fights that have been made or play by play or just the big news, right? It's more the lighthearted stuff. So we call it the Blue Corner because we always know the red corner is the championship corner. So, wow, incredible. What an impact you've had just by some of the decisions you've made. I've seen a lot of websites, podcasts, just reference that system alone. So thanks for sharing that story. A lot of people didn't know that. Let me hand it over to Goz. Goz, what do you got for our guest, Bert Watson?
Bert, so I'm looking at the shirt right now, Legend to Legend. We've done quite a few of them.
Yes, sir.
This one was Cain Velasquez, and I'm sure they all stand out to you in different ways, but how did you arrive at Cain, and you know, what were your overall thoughts and your conversation with him?
Well, Legend to Legend is that, is where I sit with true legitimate legends of the sport. Of MMA, grappling, martial arts, Muay Thai, you know, it's where I sit with legends of the sport. And I'm right now on episode 8 with Cain Velasquez. And, you know, I've done George St. Pierre and Randy Couture. And as I was sitting down putting the next show together, I actually ran into Cain at a Bellator event. He was working a corner. And the minute I saw him, that light bulb went off. And I asked him if he'd be willing to sit with me on an episode of Legends to Legends, because Kane has I mean, an awesome story, you know, from the time of his grappling in high school to Division II, Division I wrestling at Arizona State, and wrestling with with Dalloway and Bader. And, you know, he has great history, and he's an awesome grappler. And the thing that got me about Kane was that Kane was kind of a silent assassin. He was very low key. You know, MMA and the sport gave everybody a voice, and everybody used it. They were very loud with it. Cain Velasquez was totally different. If you didn't know Cain Velasquez, you didn't know he was in the ring until he put somebody on their back, okay, or knocked somebody out. And he had a pretty good punch. I know he told me in his interview that they used to call him Pillow Hands because they said he had no punching power. But I think if you go back and look at the tapes of Nogueira and Brock Lesnar, not that I'm calling anybody out, you'll see that Kane not only has a good ground game, but he was quite capable of knocking people out. So it was not hard for me to make a decision to ask him to grace our stage and our presence with Legend to Legend. And it was definitely an awesome interview. I think I saw Kane smile more in that interview than I've ever seen him smile. But it was awesome, baby.
Yeah, that's actually something that stood out for me, too, was just the mood that he was in. And you and I can maybe tag team this, because this is a question I think the audience is going to ask right off the get-go is, why didn't we ask him about what's going on in his personal life right now? And look, it's a very easy answer. There's quite a few reasons, but first and foremost, those are all ongoing, and anything that he can say in these interviews could maybe potentially affect his court case. So it was a decision that was made by everyone to just kind of focus on what it is we focus on, Legend to Legend, and put that to the side for now. Plus, you know, I mean, even if we had the opportunity, it just takes you into a different mindset, a different place, and really what we're trying to focus on is something completely different. But do you want to add anything to that, Bert?
100%. You know, the premise of Legend to Legend is just that. A guy's career, how he impacted the sport, how the sport impacted him, how his contribution to the sport impacted others, you know, how he navigated through the sport. That's the first thing of Legends to Legends, is to get to the meat and potatoes of it. What I also do with Legend to Legend, and what we try to make sure, is that we stick to what we know. And politics and political stuff and, you know, some stuff with the law and some other things, I really don't know that much about it. So for me to discuss and have a conversation with someone, to put them in a situation that they might have to answer a question that I might not have an answer for, and we put the wrong thing out. And then the one thing you can't do with words is pull it back in. You can throw them out there, but you can't pull them back in. So I try to stay away from those things. And I didn't want to get anybody in an uncomfortable situation because we had too many good things to talk about. And I think we did that. So as opposed to putting him in an uncomfortable situation, and also if to talk about that, something that's still ongoing, I wouldn't have done it any justice because I have no idea. And I'm not going to go into something that I don't know.
Bert, you mentioned staying local as part of your future. Do you have anything in mind, or do you have anything working as of right now?
Well, you know, my thing is combat sports. And I've been in combat sports, as I said, since 1999. And combat sports is boxing and grappling and mixed martial arts and bare knuckle, and believe it or not, sumo is a part of combat sports. And that's what I've done the last 6 months. I've done 3 sumo events, which were awesome and outstanding. I just recently did a sumo event, which was held at the at Madison Square Garden under the World Championship Sumo League, which it's an awesome sport. You know, I never really understood what that was and how it worked, but the premise is that those two guys get in the circle, which is called a dojo. And the only thing that's allowed to touch that mat is the bottom of their feet. If anything else touches that mat, even their hair, then they're disqualified. So the premise is to get the guy to have something else touch that mat or that ring aside from the bottom of their feet. Or you get them outside of the circle. And it's all about skills and maneuvering and technical skill level and leverage and strength. And, you know, I aside from the fact of getting these guys to wear compression shorts, I had a pretty good time.
That's awesome. So, you know, obviously I would have never expected an answer like that, sumo wrestling. But look, you got a book that's coming out that's going to tell us even more about what makes Burt Watson tick.
Yes,
can you
yes,
maybe
sir.
Tell us what's the name of the book? When does it come out? And how will it kind of stand out from any other interviews that we've ever heard from you, or, you know, what's going to make it different?
I finally get a chance to sit down and put my thoughts on paper and to write my thoughts as they are and as they were and what got me to where I am today. The name of my book is called Being Burt Watson, written by Burt Watson. And it's basically, I talk about my upbringing, my childhood, as briefly as I can, you know, because my mom and my family were very intricate in my development then as they are now, because my kids and my grandkids right now are a major part, and my wife, of who I am and how I function. So the book right now, it'll be out. I'll be done probably by the middle to the end of May. It's called Being Burt Watson, written by Burt Watson. And I sent you guys a barcode that I will be putting up on the website on my social media probably next week with a little video. And in that book, I talk about my time with Joe Frazier, Muhammad Ali, Leila Ali, Brock Lesnar, Conor McGregor, George St. Pierre, working with the Gracie family. It just talks about all those things. You know, I try to capsulize all those things into something that's maybe not 300 pages, but something that's really interesting. And I got some pretty good stories in there of working with the guys and the people I've met along the way and how I've navigated through this sport as long as I have and at the level that I have. For me, it's been a hell of a journey, because I don't see too many people at the coordinator level, you know, that look like me, that kind of are not in the cage. And, you know, for me, that's a sense of pride. And it taught me something that I can express and teach others. And I also learned everything that I express in my book and everything that I say in my book, I learned from the best in the world. You know, I learned from Joe Frazier. I learned from Muhammad. I learned from George St. Pierre. I learned from Conor McGregor, you know, Ronda Rousey, Amanda Nunes. I learned from those people what to say, what not to say, how to say it, and who to say it to. Because my thing has always been for the sake of the fighters and the sake of the competitors. And I'm trying to squeeze in the sumo, World Championship sumo in there since it's kind of rounding out my combat sports career. But I'm very excited about the book, and I hope you guys get to purchase it. You know, again, on my site, I'll put up the barcode where you can scan it and go to it, and you're going to enjoy it. Trust me.
When is the drop?
Being Burt Watson.
When does it drop?
It drops the end of May.
Oh, okay, cool. So it's right around the corner,
yes,
kind of.
Yes, yes, yes.
Wow. So you can still add the sumo part, and then by May we'll already have it.
Because I am right now. I just finished reading the first manuscript.
Yeah.
So I read the manuscript. I put whatever changes I made, and I have a ghostwriter. Her name is Dee Lockett, a young lady out of Detroit, who is awesome. And she's reading what I kind of changed or corrections I put in the manuscript, and she's going to put her 2 cents in. I'm going to put my 3 cents in, and then we'll put that nickel together and come up with a quarter, if that makes sense. Okay, but I'm excited. It's something different, and she's definitely awesome because some of the things I say to her as we go along, and I've read the first manuscript. Some stuff I forgot I said. The only thing that I remember, I do curse a lot, which I gotta clean that up. I gotta clean that up. You know, she said that to me once or twice. And if you notice, I have not said a curse word yet in this interview. I'm learning.
Yeah, no, we've heard that side of you for sure. But, you know,
yes,
that was part of the motivation. You needed to do what you needed to do.
Yes, sir.
Bert, listen, it's always great catching up with you. We look forward to the book dropping in May.
And yes, sir. Of course,
when it does, when we read it, we'd love to circle back with you, talk about the book, you know, and I don't know what your plans are. I don't know if you're doing any book signings or a book tour or anything like that. But any info you get, we'd love to share. You're part of the Junkie family. You know, the legend. You're part of Junkie Nation. All the interviews you've ever done with us at the Mandalay Bay. So, we love you, and we always wish the best. So we'll always be there to help you out with this as well.
Well, you guys have always been a mainstay in my career and in the career of so many others in MMA and in this world. I mean, you know, if you haven't been on MMA Junkie, you ain't been nowhere. Okay? And you guys have done that and have been there for me and for everybody else in the sport. And I know everybody appreciates it. And believe me, I will definitely be back when that book is done because I'm excited about it. And I'm excited to see it. Everybody with a copy reading it.
Sounds good. All right, Bert. Well, thanks again for hanging with us here on a Sunday afternoon. And
yes,
as always, we wish you and your family the best. We'll talk to you soon. What do you think will be the best part of his book? Just the behind the scenes stuff?
What happened with the UFC?
Yeah, I can't wait to check it out. And the fact that it's coming out in May, that's pretty soon.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes people will tell us about books they're writing and it'll be out later this year or whatever. You know what the worst is? When you go to the movies and you watch previews and you're like, okay, that one sucked. All right, the next one sucked. Hey, that's pretty cool. And then they go, Thanksgiving weekend, you know, it's like, oh my God, we're just in April. Yeah. Holy cow. But yeah. What is it? Being Burt Watson by Burt Watson? Written by Burt Watson?
Yeah, I wish you would have done something else with that.
We'll give you guys information as soon as we get it, but it will be out in May. What did you think of Charlie Arnold stepping in for Joe Martinez? She's basically the first female in-ring announcer, like a master ceremony, like what Bruce Buffer used to do, or who was the original guy? Rich Goins was the guy that did it. Joe Martinez has done it.
Mm-hmm.
Not too many people have ever done it. And now we have the first female ever because Joe Martinez, I guess, was feeling ill.
Yeah, I didn't think she did that bad, to be honest, for having to do it on the fly like that. I thought that was pretty good.
Mm-hmm. I think just the other day I asked Goes what his price would be if he had to do it. And you had mentioned that you thought you'd be petrified to do something like that, right? Or scared of messing up.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't think I would be good at it.
Yeah. This weekend, so in other words, today's Sunday. You guys will get this on Monday. So this upcoming Saturday is UFC 301. We're doing a watch along here on MMA Junkie, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific for the early. No, those are called the featured prelims of the card. And then, of course, at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific, that's the main card, which is a pay-per-view. But if you watch the fights with us, we'll tell you what's going on. So you don't even have to order it if you don't want to. It's like listening to the radio back in the day. The first fights are obviously always free, like on one of the ESPN platforms, ESPN if we're lucky, otherwise ESPN2 or whatever. But yeah, once they switch to the main card, you got to pony up $80. But if you don't want to do it, and I have a feeling this might be a card that a lot of people don't, we got you. We'll be your eyes and ears, and we're back to our normal start time of 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Steve Ursig and Alexander Pantoja. You think by Saturday you'll be pumped up about that fight, Ghost, because it is a title fight, or is it still just tough to digest?
Still tough to digest.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, maybe a few beers and some parlays will, just make things exciting. I was at a soccer game today, and I was pretty pumped up. And, you know, it's Peruvian football, and it's fine and all. But you put a bet on something, trust me. All of a sudden, you're yelling at the refs and yelling at the players. But that's why I'm wearing this jersey right here, Melgar. I mean, I know this is a podcast, so you guys don't get to see it. But I've always liked their colors, black and red.
Mm-hmm.
Folks, we're going to get on out of here. Don't forget to watch Spinning Backlick. Every Monday, it's live, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. And we did take 2 weeks where we went 90 minutes and started at 8:30, but this is the normal start time, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. Tomorrow, we're joined by Nolan King and Fatah Hanoun. We're going to discuss the latest news in mixed martial arts. I'm sure there's some stuff to cover from UFC on ESPN 55. And, of course, Knuckle Mania 4, along with some of the other major stories from this past week. Hit the like button and subscribe, which is what you hear with from the YouTube world, but it really does mean a lot. So if you get in there a little bit early, do that for us. You'll often hear me say it through every broadcast. It helps. Oh, I do want to say one last thing on the way out. Congrats to Benil Dariush. He's going to get the 2024 Forrest Griffin Community Award. And that dude really has done a lot of stuff over the years. This one did not shock me, Ghost.
No, not one bit. He totally deserves it.
Yeah. All right, folks. We'll see you all tomorrow then for SBC. Jump in the chat if you get a chance. It's like the old Junkie Show days. Folks, go out and be a champion. Take care.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.